Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is the 10th podcast I have recorded. I'm recording it in August of 2008 for posting at the website in September of 2008. The title of this one is The Case Against Valuation-Informed Indexing. Valuation-Informed Indexing is the approach to investing that I advocate at my website. To understand what valuation-informed indexing is, you first need to know what indexing is. Indexing is an approach to investing that has been promoted by John Bogle for some years now, since the late 1970s. It's an approach that has become very popular, and I view the introduction of indexing onto the scene as a revolution in middle-class investing. The great power of indexing is its simplicity. We are in a situation today where middle-class investors need to provide for their own retirements. And in order to obtain a decent return on their money, they need to invest in stocks. But the majority of middle-class investors are not terribly excited about learning all there is to know about stock investing. So most of us don't want to be spending our weekends, studying Value Line and looking at all the annual reports of all the various companies. So indexing was tailor-made for the middle class, for the typical middle class investor. What you do when you index is you don't buy shares of individual stocks. You buy shares in an index of a large number of stocks, representing possibly the entire stock market of that country. So for example, if you buy shares in the S&P index, you're buying shares in 500 large companies that are typical of all of the companies in the U.S. economy. So you're essentially buying a share of the productivity of the U.S. economy. And the wonderful thing about this is you don't have to worry about picking a bad company. If you buy shares in a single company, say Apple Computer, and Apple Computer does very well, you of course do very well. But what happens if you buy shares in Apple Computer and Apple Computer does poorly? Say Apple Computer goes bankrupt. Well, then the value of your investment too goes down dramatically ends up being worth nothing. So you're taking on a risk when you invest in a single company or in a small group of companies. Now, there are investors who are sophisticated enough to study what companies are likely to do well, what companies are properly valued, and all things of that sort. And those investors, first of all, know which companies to pick. And secondly, they know how to diversify, so that if they happen to pick a few losers, they will also likely have a few winners in their portfolio and they won't be wiped out by making mistakes. But the average middle-class investor is not in that situation. So for the average middle-class investor, indexing is a wonderful choice. I think it's the best choice for the large majority of middle-class investors. And the really wonderful thing about it is, while indexers are not likely to obtain returns as good as those obtained by the most sophisticated investors picking individual stocks, indexers can obtain very good returns indeed. The long-term average return on U.S. stocks is 6.5% real. Throw in 3 percentage points of inflation, and you have an annual return of close to 10%. That's amazingly good. It's an amazingly good return for someone who doesn't even have to take on the job of studying stocks. It's a fantastic deal. And that's why indexing has become so popular in recent years. There's a problem, though. There's a big, big problem with the conventional approach to indexing put forward by Bogle. And the big problem is that while Bogle was a genius in coming up with the indexing concept and promoting it so effectively, Bogle, like many others of today's investing experts, fell for a concept known as passive investing. Passive investing is investing without concern for valuations. A passive investor will stick with the same stock allocation, even at times when prices go to absurdly overvalued levels. Now, that's a terrible mistake because what I do at the website is study the historical data to learn how stock investing works in the real world. And what you learn when you study the historical data is while most people think that stocks are a risky asset class, in reality, they are far less risky than most people realize. The risk is concentrated. During times of low and moderate prices, stocks are really not that all that terribly risky. It's true that at all times you can see price drops, but at times of low and moderate prices, the price drops are likely to be small, not to be huge price drops, or if they are large, they are likely not to remain in place for a long period of time. None of that is true at times when stocks are at the sorts of prices that apply today. When you get to the sort of valuation levels that apply today and that have applied going back to the mid-1990s, you are taking on a risk of suffering a huge loss in your portfolio value. There are three times in history when we have been to the price levels that apply today, and the average price drop on those three occasions is 68%. So if over the course of your life you've been saving money, preparing for your retirement, and you're hoping to retire soon, and you've accumulated $1 million in assets and you have it in stocks, there's a good chance that a few years down the road, you're going to be left with only $350,000, a loss of two-thirds of your accumulated wealth. That's too big of a hit for a middle-class worker to suffer. So those of us who support the indexing concept should not be encouraging people to buy into this passive investing concept, which has been the cause of such human misery throughout the history of the stock market. What I believe we should be doing is encouraging indexing, yes, but encouraging a rational approach to indexing, not the highly emotional passive investing approach. And the rational approach to investing I call valuation-informed indexing. What you do with valuation-informed indexing is that you buy the same indexes that you would buy if you were practicing conventional indexing, but you make changes occasionally in your stock allocation when prices rise to absurdly high levels or absurdly low levels. You don't have to make many changes, but you might need to change your allocation once every 7 or 8 years. And by making those changes, you protect yourself from the worst that the stock market can dish out at times of extremely overpriced stocks. And we have calculated, there are many articles at the site about valuation-informed indexing. There are calculators that you can use to show how much better your long-term return is likely to be if you follow a rational approach to indexing. And those calculators show that in the typical case, a middle-class investor who follows valuation-informed indexing might well be able to retire 5 years sooner than a worker who follows the conventional approach to indexing, because he will suffer loss so much fewer, he will lose so much less at times of overvaluation, and then will enjoy compounding returns on the amount that he was able to hold in his portfolio. Now, the valuation-informed indexing approach, that's a particular strategy. It's the strategy that I recommend for most middle-class investors. But It's one particular strategy that falls under that under a broader heading, a model of investing, which rejects the passive investing model and which is called rational investing. That's rational investing is the opposite of passive investing. Rational investors do take valuations into account. They do change their stock allocations when prices get out of control. One of the principles of rational investing is that the investor always wants to learn more about how stock investing works. Now, this is the most basic recommendation I can imagine. Of course we should want to learn more. Why would we not want to learn more when our money is at stake? Well, the reality is that passive investors, and in particular, the most dogmatic advocates of passive investing, are closed to new information about stock investing. And if you want to learn more about that, you can listen to some of the earlier podcasts dealing with the discussions we've had at a number of retire early and indexing boards during the first 6 years of the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate. Passive investors are investors who, the problem is that the passive investing concept is pure emotion. There is no support for the idea that valuations do not affect long-term returns. You will not find anybody who can offer any support whatsoever in the historical data for that idea. So it's a purely emotional approach, and reasoned discussion of how investing works in the real world is seen by many passive investors as a threat to their core investing strategy. So they close their minds to new information. The rational investor does just the opposite. The rational investor is always trying to learn. So rational investors love to submit their ideas and their strategies to others for their review and to get feedback. And one of the ways that we keep ourselves humble, one of the ways that we keep ourselves from getting too far away, too carried away in our enthusiasm for our strategies, is by trying to be self-critical, by looking for the flaws in those strategies so that we can improve them over time. And I wrote an article at the website called The Case Against Valuation-Informed Indexing. And in that article, I tried to come up with 20 arguments against the investing approach that I recommend. And if you want to read all the arguments, please read the article. In the podcast, my hope is that I might have time to get through roughly 10 of them. And I'll just go through those arguments. I'll present the case against valuation-informed indexing, and then also offer my comments as to whether personally I, Rob Bennett, think that these arguments against valuation-informed indexing are good ones or moderately strong or not so strong. Argument one against valuation-informed indexing. The equity premium has recently been greatly diminished. The equity premium is the extra return you get from stocks by virtue of the fact that you are investing in a riskier asset class than most of the alternatives. I mentioned earlier, I said middle-class investors have to invest in stocks. Why do we have to? Why can't we just invest in nice, safe asset classes like certificates of deposit and I-bonds? Well, the reason is those asset classes are not risky enough. And at first, that might sound like a little bit of a paradox. Why would we intentionally want to take on risk? Well, the reason we want to take on risk is the institutions that are offering the asset classes will have a harder time persuading people, as a rule, have a harder time persuading people to take on risky investments. So they have to offer a better deal to get people to agree to take on that risk. And that means an added return for the investor. So stocks, for a long, long time, there's no guarantee about the future, but for a long, long time, stocks have been providing a better long-term return than the super safe asset classes like I-bonds and certificates of deposit and so forth. So you're hurting yourself If you put all your money in I-bonds or in certificates of deposit, in the long term, you're hurting yourself. Now, this gets a little bit tricky. Some people have been led to believe that there's some sort of law of the universe that says stocks always offer a better long-term return than I-bonds or certificates of deposit. Not so. When stocks become too popular, as they have in recent years, as a result of the huge bull market, when stocks become too popular, there's no need to compensate investors for taking on that extra risk. And in fact, in recent years, there has been not an equity premium, but an equity penalty. In recent history, we've had a lot of years when you could buy I-bonds or TIPS, Treasury Inflation Protected Securities, and get a better guaranteed return than the likely return you would obtain from investing in overpriced stocks. So you can't just say because an asset class is more risky that it's going to provide a better return. That's not so. But as a general rule, it is so. Generally, that's what you should expect. So you need to invest in stocks. Now, the risk premium for stocks has historically been very high. As I mentioned, stocks historically have provided, in the United States, have provided a real return of 6.5%. That's well above what you can ordinarily get from the super safe asset classes. The ordinary return of the super safe asset classes is probably around 3% real. If you look carefully for good deals, you can probably lock in a real return of something close to 3% real. You can't get that today. Today, you would probably have to settle for 2% real, or you might have a bit of a hard time getting even that. So it changes. Back at the top of the bubble in stocks, you could get super safe asset classes offering a real return of over 4% per year. So that was an amazing situation, but that certainly does not apply today. So ordinarily, the risk premium, ordinarily the expected return for stocks is a good bit higher than the return on safe asset classes. So that increased rate of return is called the risk premium. Now, there's a fellow named James Glassman who put out a book in the late 1990s called Dow 36,000. And we obviously are not at Dow 36,000 today, and a lot of people laugh at this book title today because Glassman put out the book and, it's viewed as a prediction that the Dow was going to go to 36,000, and it hasn't, and they view it as all part of the bull market hysteria. Well, to some extent, I agree with that. I certainly agree that if people were already far too enthusiastic about stocks in the late 1990s, and so anything that encouraged them to be even more enthusiastic about stocks was in one respect a bad thing. But I believe that Glassman makes an intelligent argument in his book, and I think it's a little unfair to be to ridicule it. I don't think that's appropriate. I think it's right to question the argument, and I think it's right to point out the danger of falling for that argument. I think it's right to point out that stocks go through good times and bad times, and that books like Dow 36,000 tend to come out at good times and tend to come out at the threshold of bad times. So all that is fair. But the argument in the book is an intelligent argument, in my view. And the argument is that middle-class investors have in recent decades discovered things about stocks that they never knew before. That's what Glassman argues. And as a result, he argues that stocks are going to permanently stay at what historically would be viewed as very high valuation levels. I don't buy this. I don't think it's so. I think stocks are going to come back down to moderate valuation levels, and I think there's a very strong chance that when people feel the emotional crush that follows from stocks falling to moderate valuation levels, stocks are then going to fall to lower than moderate valuation levels. They're probably going to fall to levels back like the levels we saw at the beginning of the huge bull market, the levels we saw in the early 1980s. So I don't agree with Glassman, but what I like about Glassman is that he doesn't just say, I think stocks are going to go up, 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 like some people do. He offers a coherent intellectual argument for that case. He says middle-class investors have discovered something new. What he's saying is that stocks are going to perform in the future in ways in which they have never performed in the past. And if that's true, valuation-informed indexing will not work. So, Glassman is pointing out a potential weakness in the argument that I make for valuation-informed indexing. It's not an argument that I'm persuaded by, but it's an argument that you should keep in mind. It's an argument you should think about before investing your money pursuant to this strategy. Another argument against valuation-informed indexing. Today's numbers are just too shocking to be true. I have a calculator at my website. It's called the Stock Return Predictor. And the purpose of the calculator, what the calculator does is it performs a regression analysis. That's a statistical tool. It performs a regression analysis on the historical stock return data. And it tells you the likely 10-year return on stocks. It doesn't identify just one number, but it identifies the most likely return, and then it identifies a range of likely returns and assigns a probability to each point on the spectrum of possibilities. And it does this based on how stocks have always performed in the past. I view it as a very valuable tool. I think that every investor should be looking at such a tool before putting money down on stocks. What the predictor is really telling you is the price of stocks. It's telling you how much the value proposition of stocks changes as price changes. So if you don't look at that, you've ignored 50% of the picture of stock investing, in my assessment. Now, a lot of people love the calculator. Go to the website and you can read what people say about it. But there are some people who hate the calculator with a burning passion. Now, I think that's strange. I think it's strange how people can hate something that provides new information bits. I can understand people saying, I don't accept the calculator's findings. You know, James Glassman is not going to accept the calculator's findings. He's not going to buy into it. You know, that's fine. You don't buy into it. But even if you don't buy into it, you should be glad it's there. It's available in case you ever change your mind, or it's available to people who have different thoughts. I don't see how information bits can ever be a bad thing. So, in my mind, the calculator is a valuable tool, whether you think it will work or not. But some people just hate the fact that it even exists. Believe me, I've seen this on many occasions. The people who hate it tend to be dogmatic, passive investors, people who have bought into this idea that valuations don't matter, that you don't need to change your allocation in response to dramatic changes in valuations. And they look at the numbers in the calculator and their tummies start to hurt because they see how much valuations always have mattered throughout history, that there has never in history been a time when the passive investing model described the stock market realities. So they find the numbers shocking, and they reject the calculator. They reject the investing approach that the calculator advocates. I reject that argument. I think that's just mixed up. The thing to do is think back to the 1990s. Remember those days when you were reading in the newspaper about 20% jumps in stock prices and 30% jumps in stock prices? Well, guess where the money came from? We borrowed it from the future. We borrowed it from future investors, which are today's investors, which are us. We borrowed it from ourselves. Now we're just paying back the debt. All that bull markets are they're like borrowing on a credit card. Well, now we've got the bill to pay. That's the way it works. So if you're shocked by the numbers generated by the historical data, well, maybe you should be shocked by how much we drove stock prices up in the 1990s. The shock you're feeling it looking at the realities today is just the reverse side of the coin. But, you know, a lot of the investing experts were not expressing shock then. They express shock when they see what we've done to ourselves. I think that's backwards. The time to be expressing shock was when we were borrowing on the credit card. And the thing to do now is to respond rationally and prudently to the situation we've created and to get through it. And then once you get through it, you know, you'll have years of good stock investing on the other side. But given that we allowed this situation to take place, we now need to take steps to protect our portfolios from what we've done. So I don't find the numbers shocking. I find the numbers perfectly reasonable given the situation we created in the 1990s. Another argument against valuation-informed indexing. If you are willing to wait 30 years, the arguments for conventional indexing hold up. The argument for conventional indexing, the passive approach to indexing, is that indexers acknowledge that there will be times when we will have huge price drops. What they say is that if you hold for the long term, stocks will likely provide a very solid return. And there is a sense in which that's true, but there's an important sense in which it isn't. It all depends on what you mean by long term, and very rarely do they define what they mean by long term. Most of us think of the long term as some people think holding stocks for a year is the long term. Well, that's not fair, but there are some that seem to think that. But most of us think of the long term as being maybe 5 years, or maybe 10 years, or maybe 15 years, that you're going to have to hold stocks for that long to get a solid payoff. Well, that's not long enough. Not at the prices that apply today. You could have a very, very poor return in 5 years, or in 10 years, or even in 15 years. If you can hold for 30 years, stocks purchased today are likely to provide a very solid return. So that argument against valuation-informed indexing is totally true. The only question is, can we really afford to wait 30 years to receive a good return on our investments? I can't. I don't think most of my fellow middle-class investors can wait that long. Even if you're not going to retire for 30 years, you want to see increases in your portfolio size in a shorter time period than that. So it's not at all prudent to stake all of your chips on this idea that you're going to wait 30 years. Now, if you're talking about taking 30% of your portfolio and putting it in stocks with the thought that you will not touch that portion of your portfolio for 30 years, I have no problem with that. Even if we suffered a 68% price drop, if you only have 30% in stocks, you're only suffering a 20% drop in your total portfolio value. That's a very hard hit to take, to be sure, but that's the worst case scenario. And I think maybe, you know, if you want to enjoy the good returns associated with stocks, you might have to be willing to risk taking that kind of hit. But you don't want to take the kind of hit that comes if you've got 60% invested in stocks at these prices, in my opinion. Another argument against valuation-informed indexing. Investors lack the emotional maturity to follow this approach. This is the argument you hear from some of the smartest advocates of passive investing. Bill Bernstein comes to mind. Larry Swedrow made an argument along these lines when I had a discussion with him about valuation-informed indexing at the Vanguard Diehards Board. There is truth to this argument. The argument is investors lack the emotional maturity to follow this approach. There is truth today. I do not believe, I've spoken with tens of thousands of middle-class investors about these ideas, and it is true that many investors today do not have what it takes to employ the valuation-informed indexing approach successfully. But the problem is not that these people aren't capable of doing it. The problem is They've had all this passive investing junk drilled into their heads for 20 or 30 years. They hear investing and they think of these slogans. They think stocks for the long run, buy and hold, stay the course, timing never works. All of this stuff is, you know, it's become the ABCs of investing. All of the fundamentals are wrong. All of the fundamentals we've been taught are wrong. They're all rooted in this passive investing model. That's our problem today. And the reason why that's happened is that we've just lived through the largest bull market in the history of the United States. Passive investing type strategies always become insanely popular when prices go insanely out of control. I think we need to stop this crazy having one strategy in bull markets and then being wiped out and then having a new strategy in the bear market that follows. We need, if we're going to be long-term investors, we need strategies we can stick with through both bull and bear markets. And that means we need to be adjusting our stock allocations to keep our risk level roughly stable. And what I have seen is that many investors are not ready for that today, but many investors have shown a great interest in these ideas and have asked lots of questions and showed a great amount of enthusiasm about learning more. And as you learn more, it all makes sense. The great thing about valuation-informed indexing is the more you know about it, the more confidence you have in it because it makes sense. It holds together. Whereas passive investing is just the opposite. You can be pressured into believing it during a wild bull market because everybody's against your common sense. Everybody's saying prices don't matter, always stocks, prices don't matter. And it beats you down. You eventually just sort of give up. You give up on your human reason, but not so with valuation-informed indexing. The more you learn about it, the more it makes sense. It just, your confidence grows and grows. So for the long-term investor, I think it's the strategy that makes more sense. Another argument, investors will be tempted to take extreme positions. Again, that's true to some extent today. A lot of investors will look at the stock return predictor and they'll say, well, I don't like the return that stocks are likely going to provide. I'm going to go to a zero stock allocation. Well, that's not smart. Because if you spend any time at all studying the predictor, you'll see it doesn't predict, it doesn't say, it doesn't give a precise number that the return's going to be. It gives a range of possibilities. And the range of possibilities at 10 years out is broad. We can assign different probabilities to different points on the spectrum, but the odds of you obtaining a good return on stocks are far lower at times of high prices. But that doesn't mean that the odds are zero. And so taking an extreme position like going to a zero stock allocation is generally not a smart move. Well, that's just a question of education. We just need to educate people. And again, the problem is the passive investing model, which rules out all forms of market timing. What we need to do is to teach people what forms of market timing work and what forms of market timing do not work. Short-term timing, timing the market with the changing your allocation with the thought that you're going to receive a payoff within a year or two, doesn't work. Long-term timing, changing your stock allocation with the expectation that it will pay off in the long term, works. It always has worked. And common sense tells us it must work. So we need to educate people. People won't be able to practice valuation-informed indexing if they're not educated about it, but the answer there is to start the educational process. Start explaining the weaknesses of the passive investing model and the strengths of the rational investing model and the approach to indexing that falls under the rational investing model, valuation-informed indexing. Another argument, the market has remained at high valuations for over 10 years now. Some people, we are now at one of the highest valuation levels in the history of the U.S. market. I say that all the time. But I could have made the same statement back in 1995, 1996, 1997, 1998, 1999, 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007. We've been at high valuations for a long time. That's what bull markets are all about. That's what crazy bull markets are all about. Some people just can't accept it, that that could ever change. They say, we've been there a long time. We're always going to be there. Well, look at the historical record. That's never happened in the past. Every time we have gone to these valuation levels, we have been crushed in the years that follow. Every time, no exceptions in the historical record. So people are looking at 10, 12 years of history and saying things can never change, and they're just looking at too small a slice of history. They need to look at a broader historical perspective. We have historical data going back to 1870. A lot of people tend to focus only on the data from 1921 forward, the modern era. That's fine. And that's the focus that we use in the research that John Walter Russell does. He does the research for the calculators. That's his focus. For certain questions, we need to go back further. We need more data, so we go back to 1870. But you get a big difference when you look at 1921 forward or 1870 forward, as opposed to looking at 1995 forward. Well, if you believe that the 1995 forward world is the world that's always going to apply, valuation-informed indexing is not for you. That's for sure. There is a potential opportunity cost associated with being out of stocks for a long time. That's true. This is probably the most important argument against valuation-informed indexing. I have my money today in TIPS and I-bonds paying 3.5% real. That's a very good return for a super safe asset class. But I mentioned earlier, stocks, the long-term average return is 6.5% real. Well, do the math. It's easy. Stocks provide 3% real more per year on average than the investment classes that I have my money in. So every year I stay out of stocks, there's a cost associated with that. I pay a price. If is the biggest word in the English language. If stocks perform in coming days as they do on average. But you see, I don't expect stocks to perform in coming days as they do on average, because we're not in average times today. We're at times of sky-high stock prices. And if you look at how stocks perform at times of sky-high stock prices, my TIPS and I-bonds offer a better deal. So, there is a potential opportunity cost. I would rather be in stocks, but the risk is just too high today. And the purpose of having the calculator and other tools of that nature is so that you can inform yourself about how valuations affect long-term returns, and then make an educated decision. But I can't tell you with certainty, you know, when to get into stocks and when to pull out of stocks. That's not what valuation-informed indexing is all about. It's not some timing scheme where Rob Bennett's going to push a button on December 3rd, 2008 and said, everybody get in now. Hope you got your email. You know, that stuff is nowheresville, in my opinion, and in John Bogle's opinion. John Bogle argues against that as strong as anyone has argued against it, and I think John Bogle's right on that question. I don't agree with him on everything, but I agree with him on an awful lot, and I think that stuff is nowheresville. So there's never going to be a day when Rob Bennett's going to send you an email saying get into stocks today or get out of stocks today. What we try to do is we try to make educated allocation decisions. So I try to educate. So I look at the historical data and I say the odds are today that stocks are going to perform poorly in coming years because prices are so high. But stocks could double over the next year. That's a possibility. So there is a potential opportunity cost. That's a real thing. If prices stay high for a really long time, you know, another 20 years, you're going to wish that you hadn't followed the valuation-informed indexing approach. But they'd have to stay higher than they've ever stayed high before for that to happen. If stocks perform as they have in the past, valuation-informed indexing will pay off. But, you know, I don't have a crystal ball. All I can tell you is how stocks have always performed in the past. I can't give you any certainties about the future. It is suspicious that this approach relies on use of a rarely used valuation metric, PE10. The calculators at my website use a valuation metric called PE10. The most common valuation metric is PE1, the price-earnings ratio. PE1 is a flawed valuation metric. People shouldn't use it. If stock investing were a rational endeavor, people would reject PE1 and replace it with PE10 or some other analytically valid valuation assessment tool. Why is it flawed? When you calculate PE1, you are taking the price of the index over the earnings for the last year. If we are living in economic good times, the earnings are artificially high. And that high number causes the PE ratio to be artificially low. PE1 sometimes works. It works a lot of times, but it also generates a lot of false reads. And that's why a lot of smart people have come to the conclusion that stock returns are not predictable. They've used PE1 or some other flawed valuation assessment tool to learn how to value stocks. And they found that it doesn't work. Well, surprise, surprise. If you use a flawed tool, you're going to get flawed results and you're going to think that what you're trying to do can't be done. What people should be doing is using PE10 or some other valid tool. PE10 is the price over the average of the last 10 years of earnings. When you average 10 years of earnings, you're not getting a false read when earnings are artificially high or when earnings are artificially low. You're getting a mix of years in which earnings are high, years in which earnings are low, and years in which earnings are moderate. So you can test these things statistically. You can go through the historical data and say, here's one valuation tool, and I'm going to compare it to another, and let's see which one provides accurate information. And PE10 does the job, and PE1 doesn't. So everyone should use PE10. To me, that's so simple. But no, most people don't use PE10. It is a rarely used valuation assessment tool. That's a fair statement. It amazes me how rarely used it is. Look up PE10 in a Google search, and you know my webpage is up there near the top of the results. And I shouldn't have a chance to compete for that term. There should be thousands of smart people writing articles on PE10. So that Rob Bennett would be pushed to the bottom of the ratings. But I've got this field to myself right now. And that's crazy. It's scary. It puts a lot of responsibility on my head sometimes. But the way I try to deal with that is I try to do articles like this one or podcasts like this one where I tell people, hey, please come to my website, study what I've learned, and benefit from it if you can. But hey, please understand, I'm some guy who posts stuff on the internet, for good or for ill, and don't think that I know it all. I know what I know, but who knows how much that is, you know? So I think everybody should be using PE10. It is a rarely used tool, but the real question here, the real mystery is, why doesn't everybody use PE10? And I think the answer, again, has to do with passive investing. Once you buy into that passive investing model, you don't really want to know how things work. You sort of want to close your eyes and put your fingers in your ears. You want to hide from the realities. And PE10 spells things out a little too clear. It gives too much information. That's an amazing statement, but I think it's true. The reason people don't use PE10 today is it provides too much good information, and they can't take it. They don't want to hear it. For so long as investing is so emotional as it is today, and it will remain emotional as long as prices remain as high as they are today. All right, the last one. Few investors invest solely in the S&P index. Most of the research at the website is based on data having to do with the Standard & Poor's index. I, of course, understand that most people are not invested solely in the S&P index. When the S&P index is overvalued, as a rule, the various segments of the S&P index also are overvalued and also are likely to perform poorly in the future. So you don't get away from overvaluation by investing in, small stocks or value stocks or large cap stocks or whatever. Anything that's part of the S&P is affected when the S&P is extremely overvalued. Now, it may be, obviously, these slices are not going to perform exactly as the S&P does. So if you're super smart, maybe you'll be able to time moves into different segments and thereby limit the effect of the overvaluation. You might be able to pull that off, but please understand, if you try that, you are taking on a risk that you'll get it wrong. You might move into a slice that'll do worse than the S&P, especially if you don't pay attention to valuations. If you do it smart, you might be able to pull it off. I don't say no, but valuation-informed indexing is designed primarily for the average middle-class investor, and that's not somebody that wants to be pulling these fancy tricks of, you know, moving from one segment to another at just the right time. So for the average investor, let's keep it simple. Let's talk about how stocks as a whole are doing. And stocks as a whole is the S&P 500. That's the way people have measured stocks as a whole for a long time now, and that's what we have lots of data for. So we can give you good answers for stocks as a whole. But if you're looking at some tiny little asset class, you know, that's new, REITs, you know, have become popular in recent years, we just don't have enough data to give good information. There's nothing wrong with investing in REITs. It can be a wonderful investment. But understand that we don't have as much data, and so when you invest in that asset class, you're taking on more risk than if you invested in the S&P. And if you're a sophisticated investor, you might pull it off successfully. I've got no problem with people who go into it with their eyes wide open, trying it. But I don't think that's what the typical middle-class investor should be doing. The typical middle-class investor should be looking at how stocks as a whole are likely to perform in coming years. And to learn about that, you need to look at a broad index, and you need to look at an index for which we have a lot of historical data, and that's the S&P 500. The site is passionsaving.com. I hope you'll look for future podcasts. I enjoy doing these. Please give me feedback if you have thoughts about what you've heard here today. I love to hear from you. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.